Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We're so glad you could all join us today. And it is Sunday, December 9th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. We welcome you all. And we'll begin today with our morning prayer.
Mrs. Eddy's prayer, given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. O my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And miscellaneous writings, Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind. As when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, today we're going to get right to the lesson. Our subject is God, the only cause and creator. Golden text, Psalm. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Now, this topic, you know, the belief that we are born into matter and that we die out of it, this is the whole essence of the Adam dream. So today, we can get a much clearer sense of ourselves not being created in matter, not personal creators, but God being the one and only creator. Okay, let's see. Carol, you read the responsive reading.
Be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy. I will rejoice in Jerusalem, and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. They shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth for trouble. For they are the seed of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them. Shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, saith the Lord? Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb, saith the Lord? Rejoice ye with Jerusalem, and be glad with her, all ye that love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all ye that mourn for her. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. As one whom his mother comforteth, so will I comfort you, and ye shall be comforted in Jerusalem.
Thank you. Anyone want to comment on this, the responsive reading or the golden text?
I think the golden text, I just have got this beautiful sense of belonging to a father, mother, and also that the relationship between shepherd and sheep, that I'm always guided, provided for. Just the beautiful sense I got from that, the golden text, I mean.
Thank you very much.
Saying we are his people and the sheep of his pasture reiterated to me Mrs. Eddy's article place that he created us and the place that we're supposed to be.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good point.
And he puts us there. Certainly a very joy-filled responsive reading. Almost every verse full of joy and gladness. Good. Because it counteracts what we see out in the world where there's so much crying and complaining, blaming and other things, but rather, here it is, the instructions very clear. Rejoice.
Thank you.
Rejoice in the Lord. Very healthy.
And what is Jerusalem?
Make us look it up, aren't you?
I'm surprised somebody hasn't looked it up already. Where? Joy in Jerusalem.
A home in heaven is the spiritual.
Yeah, this is Isaiah. Isaiah was a tremendous spiritually minded prophet. He had the spiritual sense of Jerusalem, which Mrs. Eddy says is heaven. He's not just referring to a nation, this sort of special dispensation that's better than all the other nations. He's talking about heaven, at home with God. That is where all our joy is.
Thank you.
This morning, the verse in Isaiah, "For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river," that just struck me so strongly that that is where our peace is. We need to abide in our Father, Mother, God. That's the only peace.
Also, even if things seem to be not going the way you would prefer, keep your joy, because that keeps the door open for to see what God has done and is doing for you.
Thank you. Now, we had a very good Bible study yesterday about Elizabeth and Zacharias. If you missed it, do listen to it, but some of these were points that were brought out, that they kept their joy, they kept working, even though this longed-for child took a while coming. And many wonderful, deep, deep lessons to be learned here. When our church was going through the law case, and before that time, there were a lot of young people here, a lot of babies coming, a lot of children, and we were given many things to work with, which I intend to share with you today, as well as getting into perhaps the deeper, more advanced sense of God being the only cause and creator. Now, one, in the responsive reading, "Thou shalt not labor in vain, nor bring forth for trouble, for they are the seed of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them." We're always taught here to handle this belief. You know, many people, I've heard it said that their child is just, you know, what is it, a bad seed, or the black sheep in the family. That's a terrible thing to lay on anybody. And in here we would learn to make sure we would handle these things and know that could not be true. It can only happen if you think what?
You created something.
Thank you. If you think you are a personal creator, this is such a danger. And in the book, Mary Baker Eddy's 6 Days of Revelation, she says this. She says that, you know, there's even Christian scientists who think they are this personal creator, there's even more of a penalty because it's the exact opposite of all that we are learning here. So, in Precepts, Carpenter says, when parents realize that every child could be the Christ, they see what an error it is not to give every child a chance to fulfill such a destiny. Every child should be considered sacred. Its thought should be developed so that it may be of spiritual value to the world.
That's beautiful.
It is, and it's something that, you know, to take very earnestly and seriously in your heart. And it's never too late, because some of you might be hearing this for the first time. But in Science and Health, we read this week, is not the propagation of the human species a greater responsibility, a more solemn charge, than the culture of your garden or the raising of stock to increase your flocks and herds? Nothing unworthy of perpetuity should be transmitted to children. Now, what would be things that are unworthy that get transmitted?
I know I passed on to my daughter when she was younger and before I came here that church was worthless, but I'm sort of paying for that now.
Oh, good, thank you. Yeah, right.
For me, it was dishonesty. It was easier to lie than to say something. I don't think that's a horrible thing to pass on.
Thank you.
Well, take your pick. I mean, any negative, you know, emotion or thinking, vanity. I just have a friend who's a teacher in school, and he... when he has these conferences, these parents come in, and a lot of times the issues he sees in the child, and when he meets the parents, it's not, you know, it's not too hard to tell, good or bad, what's happening.
Thank you so much. You know, I once heard, you want to see what your children will turn out to be? Well, take a look in the mirror. Your example. What you're thinking, you're worried all the time, if you're fussing over them, if you're, you know, seeing danger around every corner. So many things. The children are so innocent and receptive. The paragraph before the one I just read, it's in the chapter Marriage on 61. And I wrote this lesson, I deliberately didn't put it in here because it's a tough statement, but she says if some fortuitous circumstance places promising children in the arms of gross parents, often these beautiful children early droop and die, like tropical flowers born amid alpine snows. If perchance they live to become parents in their turn, they may reproduce in their own helpless little ones the grosser traits of their ancestors. What hope of happiness, what noble ambition can inspire the child who inherits propensities that either must be overcome or reduce him to a low wreck. That's pretty tough and true. A loathsome wreck.
Some might even say, gee, what a negative thing to say, right? Well, there's a price to pay when you know better.
I also think, you know, superstitious beliefs that are passed on, or even I've heard, like, oh, you see the middle child, things like that, all that can stick in the child's thought, and it's not good.
Absolutely.
At all.
Or, you know, accepting the terrible twos. Saying, well, you know, they're going through that. These are all false beliefs. Now, as a Christian scientist, if you have a child and you just go into it blindly and you think you created something and you go on with all these beliefs, and believe me, I'm saying this because I have seen it. I was doing it. because I was so naive and stupid. I didn't understand all this thing. Mrs. Evans whacked me into shape. So these things must be dealt with. The truth, you can rely on the truth. This is false pictures. And again, it's never too late. If some of these things have happened and you have grown children, you can change your course and get it right. But you must.
And where does the change have to take place?
In your thinking.
Yes, in my own thinking. You're not going to change your children. God does that. And he does it much better than any of us could ever do.
That's right. Now, there is a story. It was a story about Nathaniel Hawthorne and his wife, and they had a very beloved daughter. And they were not Christian Scientists or anything, but this beloved daughter was on the brink of death. And it said that Nathaniel Hawthorne's wife, mother of the child, sat by the bed and just gave that child to God. Completely and totally. No strings attached. Father, she is divorced. And right after doing that, child, fever broke, and she was healed. Again, we think we're personal ownership, and we've got pride in what we have created. You have to know they belong to God, and God will develop them. God will take care of them. God cares for them. You are just simply a steward to oversee it for a while and to be the best example as you possibly can. And this lesson shows how God brings forth his ideas, his holy ideas, his holy purpose, and unfolds them as a flower. As in the case, we talked about it yesterday, the coming of John the Baptist and the coming of Christ Jesus under circumstances that would say it was totally impossible. So, and in that way, when you give your child up in that way to God, they will develop their individuality in God, and they will not have loathsome personalities. In our church, there was once a couple, they had a child who screamed a lot as an infant. And Mrs. Evans said that had to be handled right away, that it was gross human will being expressed. And they did handle it. No, that wasn't true about that child at that very early age, and that child blossomed into something quite wonderful. Now, I'm going to read two healings that Mrs. Eddy performed, I guess was the word. They're from the book, which I found very interesting, which Linda introduced me to, but it's Christian Healer, Mary Baker Eddy. And also, Dale gave us a wonderful amplified copy for the church. But anyway, this is about a healing of Clara Choate's little boy. That Clara Choate went to Mrs. Eddy one night, asking her to come and help her four-year-old who was ill. She had tried to heal him herself, but with no result. Mrs. Eddy came and prayed at his bedside for a few minutes. Suddenly, the little boy turned and began kicking the wall next to his bed as hard as he could. Mrs. Eddy sat quietly without saying a word. He continued until he was tired. Then he turned in bed again and fell asleep. Healed. Later, Mrs. Choate asked her teacher at a meeting of students how she had treated her son. Mrs. Eddy replied, "The only thought that I had was, Warren Choate, your mother governs here with the truth." And then she said, "Mrs. Choate, you don't govern that child morally when he is well, so you can't heal him when he is ill. You have done all that could be done except that you had neglected to handle the moral question. And this must be handled in every case, whether it be an adult or a small child. you never make him mind. And if you give him a command, you don't insist upon his carrying it out. The student who related this account went on to comment, "This lesson was brought home forcibly to us in the association because we would never have considered that the moral question should be handled in the case of a child." Interesting, isn't it? Now, I'm sure that child felt Mrs. Eddy's thought, and it was the error in him. It made him angry, start kicking the wall. But she kept working until it dissolved.
She wasn't impressed by it. She wasn't afraid of it. She knew it was unreality. She knew that it was error destroying itself.
The need to teach children obedience is very great, and that was certainly one that Mrs. Evans emphasized. To let your child run around wildly and get away with all kinds of things is simply not wisdom. And this is the moral question that she was dealing with, and I'm sure Mrs. Choate had to learn. And maybe she wasn't disciplining her son because she thought she had to be loving. That's not real love, is it? Any comments on that? All right, well, this is another instance. It's speaking about how much Mrs. Eddy loved her students. Cared deeply about them, and they would turn to her for help when unable to meet a challenge alone. In one instance, a mother of 6 months had been driven by the ceaseless crying of her baby to appeal to her teacher for relief. Mrs. Eddy spoke of this in a class she taught in 1888. A member of that class later wrote in a reminiscence. Mrs. Eddy said she returned to the home with the mother, took the baby on her lap, and asked the mother to leave the room. The child cried and screamed terribly, and Mrs. Eddy silently declared the truth, but did nothing else. She said the struggle went on until it seemed as if the baby might die. She continued to know that the real child could not die, and that Era had no life, and that it could not continue to manifest itself. After a short time, the child stopped its screaming and crying and went to sleep. And this was the end of that error. Then, Mrs. Eddy went on to explain to the class that the mother, before the birth of her child, had been treating a patient who had a violent temper, and that the mother had not taken the precaution of protecting herself or her unborn child. You see, how naive we all are about the workings of animal magnetism. That's why I'll be so grateful to Mrs. Evans for teaching us so much that she did. Now, in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy speaks to this, doesn't she? When she says, and this is a different case, but she says, perhaps an adult has a deformity produced prior to his birth by the fright of his mother. When wrested from human belief and based on science or divine mind, to which all things are possible, that chronic case is not difficult to cure. So, all these things have to be taken in consideration. And this is why we study the Bible the way we do, pore over it and learn lessons. Because some people do very unwise things. They expose themselves and their children to
all kinds of human
anything.
Right, anything and everything. They don't use any wisdom at all.
And the mother-child relationship is one of the most tenacious of human beliefs. It is an absolutely tenacious human belief. And you see so many so-called Christian churches glorify that relationship, right? that glorify the human family. So to unglorify it is quite a step against mortal beliefs, popular mortal beliefs.
And it is why there was so much rebellion against it. And it was true with Jesus when he taught about call no man your father, mother. He ripped apart all that human belief stuff. He certainly made it very clear that God was the only creator, and he called God Father, which I love.
Just about, I think, every reference he made to God in the Bible, check it out, he referred to him as Father.
That was his close relationship. And because he had that close relationship with the Father, he understood so much deeper things of existence. Now, he also loved little children and saw their purity and innocence and said that we want to enter the kingdom, we have to be that way, and if anyone dares to harm them in any way, well, woe be unto you.
I think Christ Jesus, the way he reverenced that father relationship also made him know only God as the supreme. And that, I'm sure, is so helpful to his healings. He could see nothing else, like he says. Nothing else was.
He saw everything as it really is. And isn't that the challenge for us? To see things as they really are. To see disease as an illusion, a mistake.
We always saw the perfect man. The human belief didn't see it.
And that's what healed the sick. Okay, Jeffrey, you read number one in Science and Health, please.
There is but one creator and one creation. This creation consists of the unfolding of spiritual ideas, their identity, which are embraced in the infinite mind and forever reflected. These ideas range from the infinitesimal to infinity, and the highest ideas are the sons and daughters.
So remember this. Remember this is true about everyone everywhere, that you are an unfolding spiritual idea. Your identity exists in mind, God, and it is unique. No one can do what you are here to do. That's why there should never be any sense of jealousy. You have your unique place. Everyone else has their unique place. A beautiful hymn, living stones we, each in our place. May we be worthy such a grace.
And notice that this description of creation is in the present tense. It's not in the past tense. It doesn't say this creation consisted. It consists. That means it's always happening. Creation is always taking place. It is always unfolding. There's no beginning and there's no end. So it's never too late to see things correctly.
Never too late. Another thing we were taught, Mrs. Evans taught us, that you know, when you have a child, it's like an acorn. Carol, do you remember that? Okay, well, what does an acorn grow into?
This oak tree.
A huge oak tree. And every identity, this unfolding, has all that it needs to fulfill its purpose, to come to complete fruition. So everything, and talk about a child, we can talk about you, talk about whoever. You have all you need. It's sort of what Jeremy said about place. You have all you need. That means you have enough finances, you have health, you have companionship, anything that's necessary. And I will say need, not want. Necessary for the fruition, for you to fulfill God's plan for you. And anything that says you don't, well, then you better stop and think, am I off track somewhere? And this is what you do know also about your children. And you should, if it is right for them to have companionship or whatever, you start working on that to know they're not going to be with people that will influence them erroneously, that they'll be with those that will help them become better in every way. You work on these things. You don't just take it for granted and throw them off into the world and wish them luck. This is the power of a praying parent, and it's also for your own yourself as well, and for all people. And just as the little acorn starts out so small, everything is in that little acorn to develop it, unfold it into a beautiful, majestic oak tree. So that includes education, anything else that you need, anyone needs, a child needs, whatever, it's there. God's plan, God's purpose, his identity for this child. That means that when you start thinking, well, my child should be a doctor, or my child should be a lawyer, or I want him to or that, you are just what?
You're interfering with
egotist.
Yes.
Tending the regulator, as Mrs. Eddy says. You're really getting in the way.
Mental malpractice.
Well, you're getting in the way. You're playing God.
I have given this to many of you. Signell Young, 1937, College, page 2. And Mrs. Evans had given it to me. A divine idea, and that divine idea can be a child, it could be a business, it could be all kinds of things, but okay, a divine idea carries within itself the power to accomplish the divine purpose and the responsibility of its unfoldment belongs to divine principle who cares for each detail of its progressive being. Powerful statement of truth. I work with this almost every day. You should too. He cares for it. He will accomplish it. And the responsibility is on his shoulders. Again, you're a steward. You can be a good example. It's a tremendous help. But it's not up to you to be dictating or determining. Because you will, I think Bruce said, you get in the way, you interfere with God's plan and purpose. And you see it now. You see parents, they want their kid to be this, that. They want them to get into certain schools. They push them here, they push them there. And what happens to those poor children?
Crash and burn.
They do. They crash and burn.
And they rebel.
Yes, they rebel mightily. And well, they should. Who are you? You're not God to be telling them what you want for them. And why do you want it? For your own pride, your own selfishness. So you can say, my child went to boobity boop, and he does bobbity boop, and I'm very proud of it, and you need to know it and be proud too. Disgusting. And as a scientist, it's verboten.
And dangerous.
Very dangerous. You can't be professing one thing and living something else. But when you work with the truth and do the best you know how, wonderful things can happen. So, and Mrs. Eddy says that it will. You can give your child a boost by turning him to God and knowing he's unfolding and he will be what God would have him be. Now, what is accretion as compared to unfoldment?
Accretion is like the slowly adding on.
Thank you.
Accumulating more and more things or knowledge or whatever. Piling it on high and deep.
And how do you do that?
Well, this education thing is one. You know, the kids have to go to college. You got to get their master's degree. They got to do that, whatever. And just let them develop into what God's plan is for them. Whereas unfoldment is the awakening of what already exists in his mind as divine intelligence being expressed. That's the truth of him. And the clearer we see that, the more unfoldment we have.
Thank you. That's exactly right. You know, Mrs. Evans used to say that children need to be children. They need to lie down on the grass and look up at the clouds and think for themselves and have time, not one thing after the next, not one activity after the next. Why? Because you're pushing them to get into Harvard or someplace else that you think they should be doing, and Lord help them if they don't.
That's going to everybody but God.
Yes, thank you. That's so true. Thank you. Going to everybody but God, yes. And not giving them the spiritual development that they need and teaching that they need. You know, spending their Sunday mornings at the athletic field. And, I mean, if you can get them into Sunday school, I mean, you know, most Sunday schools aren't worth going to, frankly. But if you can, I mean, ours certainly is, and I...
That's why we have a teleconference.
That's why we do. But at the very least, and perhaps the very best, what did you say? What did you say, Linda? What did you say to Shardy about every moment with a child is what?
Oh, it's Sunday school. Wherever I am, wherever I'm a child, I consider it Sunday school now.
That means what?
Yeah.
This is how I think about them. I don't always, it's how I interact. I make sure it's holy, it's sacred, and I see them correctly, and I see them feeling God's presence, and it's whatever comes to me at the moment that might be needed. But it's just trying to be really just appreciating being with them in the moment and feeling God.
Yes.
And it's sowing a seed. You never know, you know, the little things you say stick with them. I know that children remember a lot.
Yeah.
Some of the things my son tells me, I don't remember, but they remember when it was, if it was raining or not. So the little things you would say about God also sticks.
Yes.
And the children feel, and regardless of what the specific words were, if they feel like they're loved and appreciated as God's idea, that stays, that is permanent with them.
They respond to love, and they also are totally turned off and rebellious to hypocrisy, to fear, to human will, to you driving them to do something. So if you find a child kicking the wall, you better ask why. Why is he kicking that wall?
If you say he's enough.
Yes. So I've told you, you know, as a child I went to the, and this is no criticism of the Presbyterian Church, but it so happened. But that's where I went, and I didn't like it. I didn't like Sunday school. I don't remember why, except I would hide in the car while the rest of my family would go in. But once I started coming to the Christian Science Church, and it was this one that I'm sitting in right now that I came to, I just loved it. And that was, you know, the First Church of Christ Scientist, a branch church, but the teachers here were loving, and that's what I felt. I felt love. And that's what Bruce was saying. And Bruce tells that story of Isaiah and Mallory in the book. What was the book about, light or something?
This is a book of the Bible written in poetic format. When they were very young, they loved to hear it read to them every morning, every time. The world was once as dark as night, but then God said, let there be light. And they were just so happy just to hear that.
Yeah, and they wanted you to read it over and over again.
Every time.
And, you know, there's so many times you can teach them the golden rule without quoting necessarily, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, making it all formal, but, you know, to do it unto someone else, but you would have them to do unto you. You can teach them at that all the time you're teaching. You're always teaching. Now, Elizabeth, with a case, you know, she thought she had a son that was being very rebellious and not getting it at all. And then what happened, Elizabeth?
Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, she had him with all of them.
Yeah,
well, all of them. I don't know. Take your pick. I was thinking of Christopher, but...
Oh, okay. Well, gosh, he over the summer, he was in basic training for military academies at, and I think under the duress of everything made him think. And he wrote letters because they couldn't... have phones, which was a blessing. And he wrote me a beautiful letter, basically, you know, just saying what a good mother I was. And he said, you know, my love for you is as much as God can love another. I don't feel I've expressed it enough. And he said, your soul, you have a soul blessed by God, one that is so pure that it doesn't make sense. So I'm getting teared up as I think about it.
I'm getting teared up hearing about it.
So all this time, you know, that she was, he was fighting her, like, she'd call me with the worst stories about what how he was fighting her, rebelling everything, and she would just keep doing the best she could. In the meantime, and I told her, he is getting it. He will get it. Whether they fight you and tell you they're not, they are getting it. She would leave the calendar statements up on the bulletin board every morning, so as their children left the house, they would see it. I know Jeffrey does things like that, too, and sends these kind statements. They're getting it. Because why? Because the truth is in them. It is in them. It might be totally buried and out of sight for the moment, but it is there. And don't ever give up on them. Never, never, never give up on them. Keep at it. And it doesn't matter if it seems to be, quote, the bad seed. That's BS. There's no such thing as that. God never said it. So if God didn't say it, it's not being said. Anyone else?
Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that, you know, I knew someone much older, and they mentioned how when they were growing up, they would see people going to church in the morning with their children, and as, you know, now, modern times, they don't see that anymore, and how parents are so worried about their child's academic education, but they don't take much consideration, if any, about their spiritual education, kind of what we've been talking about, and... how that just has this, you know, bad effect on everyone, on society, and so that was just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Who else was trying to speak?
I was going to say that a big part of it too is what I've learned here at Plainfield is the impersonal love, that the possessiveness is all selfish and. And my daughter went off to college, and finally, over the last year, it's finally kicked in to think of her as perfect God, perfect man. And it's been very interesting because she's going for environmental science, and the university world is so corrupt with drugs and sex and everything else that goes on there, and there are some really rough times, but what's happened here lately is just they see this straightening out. And I think the biggest part is from getting rid of that possessive type love. And again, perfect God, perfect man. And so now she's able to show forth the morals that I did try to teach her. And I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. You know, we're mental beings, and it's once you give the child the best truth you can, then you trust them to God. You trust them to do the right thing. You think they're going to do the wrong thing, and you're always worried about them. They're going to feel that. I remember someone once said, well, his mother expects him to be terrible, and he's going to live up to that expectation. Your expectations should be from the Lord. You should expect them to do the right thing always from a very early age right on through. That to do otherwise, well, goodness, no. You hear God's voice. You want to do right. They do. They're naturally receptive. So thank you. And remember that. And remember your surplus thinking about all people. Or if you're sitting there thinking, oh, man, that person, whoever it is, son, child, husband, he's a real, you know what, and he'll never learn, and he's just been a pain all these years, and you're sending forth negative thoughts, and he's going to feel it, or she. Change it. Change how you're thinking.
And always remember that it's not a matter of my will versus your will. It's a matter of we both obey God's will. When you put it in God's hands, that eliminates the human battling back and forth.
That was so helpful. Mrs. Evans told that to me, because my boys were, at a time, they were rebelling a bit. And I would say to them, as she told me to do, Mom and Dad have to obey God, and so do you. And that was it. It wasn't just, you know, me preaching at them or making them obey. It was, they needed to obey God.
And then the key to that is, too, to make sure you are obeying God. Because if you say that, and then they see you doing all kinds of stuff, well, they're going to say,
thank you so much for that, because the key is, as you all just stated, it's putting God, the Lord, Christ, and Mary Baker Eddy in the middle of it that makes the difference. I always had this expectation, and I thought that was enough. But now I realize there's such a difference between my will and God's will, and got to put God in it.
Absolutely, and strive every day in your life to be living that will, God's will, not your own. And that's why to get willful towards your child and toward anybody.
Anything.
Can apply to anybody, not just children. Florence?
No, to anything. I was just adding to what you're saying.
Yes. Now, we didn't get into this as much, but, you know, the chapter on marriage ends where Jesus said, the children of this world marry and are given in marriage, but they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Now, the ultimate teaching of Jesus, of Mrs. Eddy, saw and understood this. It puts a kibosh on this human sense of things, that we're humans and we are human procreators, and it just perpetuating this Adam dream. Thought must be spiritualized. It must rise up, and eventually to this, where all of this will be seen for what it is, a fraud of God's true and perfect creation. But it's up to us right now to see it here and now, because that's where we are. And so Gary will end with Martha Wilcox, my love. When I get mixed up, I like to read her. Her article on scientific translation.
We need to know that creation, that is all things, is one creation.
and that all things are spiritual, no matter in what state or stage of human growth we are in. The living God made heaven and earth and the sea and all things that are therein. And everything in creation is exactly the same as this at this moment as God conceived it. It is good and very good, and it is spiritual. There can be nothing outside or beside or unlike the all-inclusiveness, one infinity. When rightly viewed, all natural things, from the sands on the seashore to the stars in the heavens, are formations of spirit and are spiritual. So also is everything from a pin to a palace, including houses and lands and money, when these are correctly understood. Mrs. Eddy says, Science and Health, page 70, the divine mind maintains all identities, from a blade of grass to a star, as distinct and eternal. Then a star, which to one state of human consciousness is inanimate matter, when rightly viewed, is an identity or is identical with mind, spirit, and must be spiritual. The whole point at issue is our individual viewpoint. All natural activities, such as eating and walking and resting and hearing and seeing and thinking and feeling, are not in nor of matter, but are the conscious functionings of the one spirit, and are therefore spiritual. All natural love and affection and gladness and happiness and joy and peace and harmony are not in nor of person, but are the one conscious life or spirit in being, and are therefore spiritual and unceasing. All things pertaining to and essential to our normal state of living, from a pin to a palace, when rightly viewed, are not matter, but are spiritual ideas at hand. All right, useful things, things that may yet seem material to us, represent spiritual ideas and are ever present and directly at hand. This is true because the spiritual fact is the substance and presence of that which is seen humanly or seen as a material thing. And we as Christian Scientists are to discern the spiritual fact of whatever our material senses behold.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.